Thou
The living room's dark, save for light being cast from the big TV screen and the imminent sunrise that's teasing the one starry sky with whispers of morning.
Hey, George.
Hey, Lyons. How's it going?
We have accomplished something tremendous here, I believe, not counting, Mario is missing and Mario teaches typing. I think we have now finished the 2D OG Mario's, like the mainline, right? I mean, because Super Mario Land and all those, like, those aren't mainline. Those don't count.
Yeah, aside from all of the ones that don't count, yes, we have completed all of the 2D Mario's.
but I mean, if you ask someone to list, yes, other than the ones that don't count, if you asked someone to list, like, the Super Mario games in order, the main series games, they would say Super Mario Brothers, Super Mario Brothers 2, Super Mario Brothers 3, Super Mario World, right?
I don't know. Everything about this is grading against the scientist in me. I have not done the legwork or the research. I've just got, I got one anecdotal piece of evidence. It was led off by and marked by, except for the ones that don't count.
I don't think anyone considers the lands as mainline.
Tentatively, yes. I'm not disagreeing with you. I'm just not agreeing with you yet.
I appreciate your politician's demeanor to not upset the hardcore Super Mario Land fans.
Yeah. No. I don't know why. Like, that's like one of the things where somebody said, this is true, right? I'm like, I haven't done the research.
Please don't make me the authority on this.
So, yes, tentatively, yes, that is correct.
I'll take it. So we played Super Mario Brothers 3 for the Nintendo Entertainment System, which shockingly came out in 1988. Yeah.
That seems, I mean, I feel like the original Super Mario Brothers should have come out about that time.
Right?
That feels closer because, I mean, that means that, because I mean, I remember like playing Super Mario Brothers and then playing Super Mario Brothers 3. Like it was like a new thing, you know, but I was definitely not playing either when I was 3. That's weird.
Yeah.
Or 7 or however old I was.
To be fair, there was probably a year of localization, right? So Super Mario Brothers 3 probably came out in Japan in 87. Mm-hmm. This is the North American release date, right? So. Mm-hmm. The thing that we will go into in greater detail is that part of the reason it's almost unbelievable that this game would have been on the Nintendo at all is because they crammed a bunch of extra technology into the cartridge, right? Which was common near the end of the Nintendo's life cycle. But this had, I think, the last chip they ever made. So if you put this game side by side with Super Mario Brothers, you would understandably be like, how could these have been on the same console? And you are right to feel that way.
We have not played Super Mario Brothers 2, the actual Super Mario Brothers 2. Yeah.
I mean, if we're bringing that one in, then we have to play the lands as well.
We have to play the lands as well, and we also have to play Mario Brothers.
I did say Super Mario Brothers, though.
You did. I'll give you that.
He was careful about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. No, I mean, that's fine. We just added like 7 more games to the backlog.
Oh, no. More games made by Nintendo. Somebody's really good at making Mario and protective of their IP.
How will we survive? Yeah. We do have to add Mario is missing and Mario teaches typing, apparently.
Yes. And, Mario Music Maker. Is that?
Do you mean Mario Paint?
Yeah. What did I say?
I think you said Mario Paint. So
yeah, I said Mario Paint. Yeah.
What are your nostalgia goggles for the Super Mario Brothers 3?
Oh, I mean, I totally owned this and just played it into the ground. You know, this was one of the games that was sacred enough that it was never the cartridge that I also shoved into the Nintendo to keep the thing down so that way it would work. That's, you know,
that's stupid. You know, the Japanese did not have that problem because the Famicom was a top loader.
Yeah, it just right? loaded into the top.
Yeah, the yeah. only the American one had to, you know, you shoved a wad of paper or something in there to hold it down.
So like there were game cartridges like Excitebike was, you know, like I occasionally like shove in there to, you know, like hold the thing down, but man, I didn't want to put Mario in there because, you know, it could get broken. And this was also one that I remember like just playing, not only playing the ever loving mess out of it, but playing the ever loving mess out of it with Game Genie like all the time, man. This was a great Game Genie game because the cheats for it were awesome and they really did enhance the game, you know, whereas opposed to like a lot of the Game Genie cheats were, you know, play less of the game, you know, like yeah,
jump to the end and then be done.
Yeah, but you know, like this one was like be, you know, Tanuki Mario all the time. Never not be Tanuki Mario. And well, yes, the fact that you're basically invincible all the time is one thing, but there was some like odd satisfaction about just going up to one of the Koopa kids and just having him wail on you and you just staring stone faced at him literally and, you know, just eating the damage. Ah, oh, it was satisfying. But yeah, no, I just
Koopalings.
Okay. I buy it. But yeah, so that's mine. I owned it, played it within an inch of its life, played it till it stopped working. How about you?
So I also owned it and played it within an inch of its life, but this is also a game that I have crystal clear memories of the cover of the Nintendo Power where he's like looking at the camera and he's kind of off to the side so that you can see the raccoon tail, right? He's sort of in that like, hey, look, it's me, Mario, but with a raccoon tail, right? This is probably the Nintendo Power that launched 1,000 Nintendo Power subscriptions because that was the issue. That was basically a strategy guide for the game because Americans were just not totally prepared for this. Like, I mean, we adapted super fast, but there was like a shock and awe at the beginning where it was like, oh my God, it's big and it's hard and right. So I definitely had this Nintendo Power. I definitely had this game. And this is one of the few games that I have memories over the course of my life of like indulging in the like behind the scenes, right? So I know more behind the scenes stuff about this game than about most of the games I've played because it was just such an icon. Like it was such a piece of everything. Like anyone who played video games anywhere in the world played this game. If you played games from this time period ever.
Like, did you know that one of the things that boosted Mario Brothers 3 popularity in the U.S. was the fact that before it was released, it was featured in a cameo in the movie The Wizard, which was basically one long commercial for video games. But man, it was like, oh my God, we actually got to see it. So yeah,
yeah, yeah, and
yeah, weird stuff like that, right?
And weird stuff like I took that movie at face value because it was the kid from The Wonder Years, and I loved The Wonder Years. Right. And it's the kid from The Princess Bride. And I love The Princess. Right. Like there's just there's this whole weird marketing machine that was happening to make that game the smash success, aside from whether or not the game was any good. Like it's the first game I remember there being like public awareness of. And if you ask, like I said, anyone who played games from this time in history, not even was alive and playing games, but like went back to play older games, there's a really good chance this made it onto their list. And it's, I think, rare for a game that was already in this popular franchise on this like revolutionary home gaming system to be like, you know, oh, name some Nintendo games, Super Mario Brothers 3. Right? It's like, no matter how they felt about it, like that's probably in the first like five games that anybody would name on the Nintendo, maybe even ahead of Super Mario Brothers.
Yeah, agreed. Now, and actually one other nostalgia thing for me is I, in the third grade, I think I went as Raccoon Mario for Halloween.
Nice.
I remember that specifically because my mom got, you know, a little hat and she got, I forgot what it was, but it was basically like one of those like paint roller type of materials and then painted it like thing and like stuck it to the butt. And I just like, I spun around the house. So I knocked over so many things, you know, I was,
there was not a vase or lamp that was safe.
But yeah, no, I mean, I was almost as bad as Link with the pots, you know, like it's just, it's like, oh no, Raccoon Mario's come in. Everybody hide the pots. But yeah, oh man, I played this game so much. So I think we both kind of, to anybody listening with like an objective third party view, they're like, well, these guys are compromised. And the answer is yeah, but we've lived better lives than you. So yeah.
Well, and also it's kind of the central conceit of the show. Here's how we remember it. Did it hold up? We actually have a whole segment in the chapter markers that you can jump to if you're listening right now and you want to see if the through line that you're predicting came true. I will say that, just to kind of, you know, pat ourselves on the back a little bit. Thanks, you know, new Twitch followers, new subscribers, new, donators, new Patreon people. I only got to play this game on stream a little bit and I didn't finish it on stream because, it's harder than I remembered. I did end up beating the game, no game genie required. But this was actually harder in reality than it was in my memory. So, if anybody came and hung out while I was playing it and I totally dropped that PG-13 facade and there's just F bombs flying everywhere. I apologize if you had little kids in the room.
Excellent. So, visuals.
They're impossible. And I mentioned this at the top, right? But this game, like a lot of late stage Nintendo games, had hardware in the cartridge, right? So The game is literally capable of doing things that the Nintendo is not capable of doing. And that
it
means
it can do things that the Nintendo don't.
It, yes, Nintendo does what Nintendo don't. I like these graphics a lot for the most part. But this game, if you look at it side by side with Super Mario Brothers, you'd be like, these can't possibly be on the same hardware. And it's like, you're kind Correct. Of right. They're sort of not on the same hardware. And that's something that has continued to actually be true for Mario games over time is Mario games are not Call of Duty. It's not a yearly franchise, right? It's not Madden. They sort of wait until they have new input methods or new graphical power, often both because Nintendo's Nintendo. And I don't honestly believe this game would have existed if they had not had the ability to shove those chips into the cartridges. I think they would have waited for the Super Nintendo or whatever was going to come next because it's just so graphically intense. Like it's everything is redone. There's no reuse anywhere.
So that's interesting because I actually watched a video on this prior to us saying that we were going to play it, you know, because again, like it's Super Mario Brothers 3. Like,
cultural phenomenon, you have like a pass on.
Yeah.
I have looked into this on my own time.
Yeah, because it's like I just did it because I was interested in it. You know, it would be like if we did an episode on like a chemistry app and it was just kind of like, well, I've got some background in this. So interestingly, one of the things that kind of happened with this was that, so there was Super Mario Brothers, which was a huge, huge, amazing hit, right? So then they made Super Mario Brothers the actual Super Mario Brothers 2.
It was called The Lost Levels when they brought it to America.
Right here.
Yeah.
Correct. But actually, the American progenitor of Nintendo here basically said, like, I'm not going to release that here for two reasons. One is it's way too hard. And two, it's the same game. Like, why would anybody buy this? It looks exactly the same. So that was like one of the things that kind of pushed them to say, like, okay, if we were going to create a new Mario game, it has to look different. It has to be a different game. It can't be like what we now know as Call of Duty. So I actually believe that, to your point, is that now Nintendo, you know, like if they won't do a thing unless they won't do a new Mario game unless they have a new way to do a Mario game, you know, to make jumping interesting or fun or have a new user input. But I think this is what started it, you know, is like this was the time when they said, like, we're going to do Mario 1 and Mario 2. And people are like, these two things are exactly the same. Why would we why would we do this? This is an expansion. This isn't a new game. And they're like, all right, well, let's try making the game look completely different and just like hold on to some of the core mechanics. But outside of that, it's going to be a completely different game. And people are like, we love this. And they're like, okay, well, cool. What about like Super Mario World? Like, again, just different. Don't own beast, new thing. It's like, we love it. And it's like, let's just keep doing this. So yes, to your point, the visuals are, they are impossible, right? Like, you know, the Nintendo can do this, but also they're their own thing, you know, like they're beautiful. But I mean, like I really enjoyed the visuals invite exploration because they are so varied and they're so different from any of the other Mario games, you know? So yeah, I mean, like exploration is definitely one of the key components of this game, and the visuals help drive that because they are so varied. They vary even from aesthetic to aesthetic between the levels. So it's like you want to know what World 3-1 looks like because it's going to look different than World, you know, 2-1, than World 1-1, than Super Mario World, than any of it. You know, it's exciting. And
they tempt you in,
well done,
even on the overworld map, because first off, there's an overworld map, right? Which is its own visual, you know, spectacular thing that allows you to navigate the levels instead of the levels just happening to you.
And that's new to this game, right?
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Doki Doki Panic did not do that, right? Super Mario Brothers and Japanese Super Mario Brothers 2 did not do that, right? It was just level 1, level 2, level 3. You had the warp pipes and stuff, but there was no map, right? So this was the first game with the map. And even on the map, it's like level 1 is a little black square with a little, I think, a white outline and like a number 1. And then level 2 is with a little number 2 and 3 and so on. But then there's like in the desert area, there's a level that just looks like quicksand. And like in, I think the, oh crap.
The pipe level? The pipe level, there's that little.
Yeah, there's the pipe. The little chompy flower thing. And then there's the pipes.
Skipped that hard, by the way.
Screw that.
Put him to sleep every time.
Then there's the pipes. There's the castles. There's the fortresses. There's the Hammer Brothers, right? So even just, you're not just selecting from like, oh, okay, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, new world. 1, 2, 3, right there. Oh, there's the mushroom house, right there. The gambling.
There's mushroom houses. There's spades. The spades. They're the spades that pop up that are like a matching game that, you know, it's just so many things, so many different things.
And all of those visuals all bait you in to say like, oh, this is still a level, but it's not a numbered level, or oh, this isn't a level, this is like its own little side thing. It's a thing where you go and there's platforming, but it's not a level, right? There's just tons of little visual cues to make you want to go explore in a game that you would argue has zero exploration, or, you know, by modern standards, zero exploration, but compared to 1-1, 1-2, 1-3, 1-4, it's Skyrim levels of exploration by comparison, right? They needed a way to get people to want to look around.
Yeah. And I mean, I think that the game, the way the visuals are set up, kind of embody the, ooh, what's that? You know, like, I mean, you know, cause it's just like you said, like, you know, it's literally in World 1-1, you go through level 1, then level 2, then there's level 3 and 4, and you don't have to play both of them. I think you may actually could bypass both and just go straight to the castle. I don't remember.
Yeah, I think you might be right.
If you want to get to the Toad House, you know, you got to play one of them. And so you're like, well, what's the Toad House, you know? So you're like, oh, well, I'll just play level 3. And you go get to Toad House. And you're like, oh, man, there's like items I can use on the world map to like make my life easier. That's kind of cool. And then, you know, you go to like the castle. And you're like, oh, okay, so that's this thing. And then, but even in World 3, with the canoe, you know, you're like, oh, there's a canoe over there. What's that about, you know? And then you go and you get into the canoe and you're like, oh, there's like a little island, you know? And then it definitely embodies the exploration, because literally as you're playing it, you're constantly like, ooh, what's that? Ooh, what's that? What's that? You know, like it's a wonderland, you know? Yeah. And it was funny because I got the warp whistle just by not paying close enough, by doing something that is so second nature to me now that like I didn't even think about it. But I only found the one, and I was like, I remember knowing where all of these were. And I went and looked online to see like, okay, where did I miss them? And it just all came screaming back to me. And I was just like, oh yeah. Oh, that's so cool. You know? And this is visuals adjacent, but just one of the things I struggled with reviewing this game was I would get so into playing it that I'd stop taking notes and just be playing the game, you know?
Dude, I literally finished compiling my notes about half an hour before we started recording. Because yeah, I was just like, oh crap, I played the game for like 10 hours that I didn't write. Right. Like I had to go back and reorganize things. And it's just because like you get into it, you get sucked in.
Yep. One thing I definitely want to mention, this is something that has been touched on many, many times, but this is our show and I want to talk about it. which is, it's definitely a play.
Oh, right? Absolutely. A stage play.
Yep. Yeah. It's definitely a stage play. Like, I don't know. It's one of those things where it's like the glass shattering, right? From How I Met Your Mother, where it's like, you know, now going through and looking at it, I'm like, how did I ever not realize this was a play? you know, like the walking off screen, the screen coming, the scrim, curtains coming down, like all that sort of stuff. But the two things that like I realized that I was, and I'm sure other people have said this, but I had not heard that I was like, oh, this also feeds into it, is that the blocks, you know, that you can like, one of them that you can like duck behind, right?
Only the white ones.
Only the white ones, right? Like those are parts of the set that are like drilled into the wall. And then you're actually, when you go behind them, you're going behind the set.
Mm-hmm.
Like you're going backstage, mm-hmm. you know? And that's why when you actually go off stage, you then go into like this, like further backstage. And then in the first world, and they kind of stop after the first world, a lot of the platforms are actually physically held up by
strings.
Yeah. I always thought they were like metal rods, you know? So they're like,
I mean, they're straight lines. So yeah.
Yeah. Straight lines.
It's, it's rope or metal rods, or it's something that is literally physically supporting the platform, as opposed to it's just up there, which is what a lot of platformers do, right? It's just bolted into nothingness.
Yes. And even the air warships, right? They're all like the way they're all tied together. It's definitely just a prop, mm-hmm. you know? Like, it's just, you know, he's just jumping, but there's nothing would fly that looks like that. You know? So it's just, they're all just like linked together. So, you know, I don't know if that's what they were going for, but if they weren't, it's fact, man. Like, there's just too much to back it up.
Well, and to your comment, like, that you never really thought about it, I think what happened to most of us as children, or if you're just not like ripping the visuals apart, is you notice, because the first thing that happens in the game is the curtain goes up, and the last thing that happens at the end of the game is the curtain goes down, right? So it's the metaphor is not subtle, but I think what happens as you spend way too much time talking about video games is eventually it's not that you think, oh, it's a play. It's that you think about the ramifications to the Mario universe if this is a play, right? So this choice of visuals is, it's cute and it's novel, and they, as far as I can think, they don't ever go back to this well again, right? So this is like, this is a uniquely Super Mario Brothers 3 thing to have all of these little nods to like, yes, this is a stage play. This isn't really Mario's life, right? This is a production that you're watching. Right. Like, what does that mean? Right. Like, and that's not something that they did by accident. And to have the shadows obviously be cast onto a backdrop, you know, to have things that are connected by ropes or by pulleys or whatever, so like the impossible ships can move through space because they're being towed across the stage, right? Because the levels are not auto scrolling in the sense that like you are being pushed forward. Mario is standing still and the level is moving underneath him, right? Mm-hmm. Because the later auto scrolling levels are just like, oh, this mechanic allows us to design interesting levels, but it often makes no damn sense. Right. But if Mario is on essentially a treadmill and the stage is moving underneath him, it's like, oh, this actually does mechanically make sense in universe, right? And so they chose a way to visually display that is like normal, like that makes total sense and isn't a video gamey thing just for the sake of being video gamey, which it's not that that's unacceptable always, but like, yeah, if you can visually tie it in and make this mechanic present itself in a way that isn't immersion breaking to the player, like, yeah, maybe do that.
Yeah. And actually, I think that from my seat, at least, is that because, okay, so like for the Legend of Zelda games, you know, the chronology in which they happen in universe is wildly different than the chronology that they came out, right? So I think that Mario works the same way in the sense that there's all of the games where he's struggling against Bowser happen, right? And then Bowser is finally defeated in one of them, right? Then the play is put together, right? And then are all of like the Mario Golf and all that sort of stuff. And that's all of the actors who played the different roles playing all of those. And they're hanging out, you know, like after they're done putting on the show, they got to go play golf or tennis or whatever.
I kind of like that theory. That might hold up pretty well.
Yeah, because now they're thinking they all want to go go-karting, you know? So like yeah, you put on a good play, you put on a good show.
Go play some golf. Speaking of like the kind of playfulness of it, I think this game is also definitely, I don't know when the ones on Game Boy came out, so I'm not counting those, I'm sorry. But this is the, as far as I know, the origin of like cosplay Mario, where, because you got the fire flower in the original game and that was like a power up, but now you like put on costumes and it makes sense because it's a play, right? So Mario literally changes his costume, and so he literally has different powers because he's in a different costume. But that has just continued on, right? Like all future Marios, or at least most of them, most future Marios, like you can also cosplay and get superpowers, right? Like they just love dressing Mario up. Like you can be a bee in some of them. You get the ice flower in one of them. So it's like fire flower, but not, right? Like, and like, okay, so let's think about it. This game has how many different costumes? There's Raccoon Mario, there's Tanuki Mario, there's Hammer Brothers Mario, there's Fire Flower Mario, there's Frog Mario. I guess Big and Small Mario, those are sort of costumes, right? Am I missing any? Superstar?
Superstar, technically P-Wing Mario, but that's kind of the same thing.
Yeah, that's Raccoon Mario, but the guy holding the rope doesn't get tired as fast.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if you don't count Big and Small Mario 6, right, if you do, which I think it's reasonable to, right, you're coming up on 10. Like, that's a lot of costume changes, and it's all in the service of the play theming, but it's also this just kind of, like, silly, playful, like, now he has a raccoon tail, and he can fly, and it's like, raccoons can't fly, and it's like, shut up! It's like, now he can swim underwater because he's a frog. And it's like, why not a fish? Shut up. Like,
yeah, because shut up. Look, I'm going to need you to go ahead and get all the way off my back about this one.
Yeah, it's just like, it's just silly and fun. And like, I'm glad that playfulness was not reserved just for the visuals in the game they chose to make look like a stage play. Like, cosplay Mario is now just who Mario is. Like, Mario is the dean from Community. He just likes to dress up.
And I think that just because now I'm going to drive this home. that holds up to the theory, right? Is because if you assume that this was the last, like, was the summation of all of the Marios that actually were Bowser's actually the antagonist, right? In all of those, Mario does get powers from like different items, you know. So they just were like, what do we think? And it may, this is totally the play from Avatar, right?
Yeah, it's the Ember Island players doing Super Mario Brothers.
Because it's like, well, remember when Mario bested Bowser and he was flying through the air with a majestic raccoon tail? No, I think it was like a raccoon tail. No, it was like, I think he grabbed a feather and it was like a cape. It's like, oh, you mean a leaf and got a raccoon tail. It's like, those two things don't even make any sense. It's like, nope, ship it, we're good. You know, like it's that. It's,
yeah, but
it's
that's what we have in the props department.
Yeah, so they're like, so they got the fire flower right, you know? And then, yeah, and then they got that. And then and they're like, well, but he's got so many different, like, you know, there's ice powers and there's, you know, Metal Mario. Oh, and that's what, you know, they're like, and there's like Metal Mario. How do we do Metal Mario? It's like, I don't know, man. It's really not healthy for us to put that much gray paint on an actor for that long of a time. Well, what are we going to do? It's like, well, we've got the raccoon suit, so what if we just kind of altered it a little bit and made it a tanuki suit? You know, it's like, well, how are we going to represent that? It's like, it'll just be a tanuki suit. So, okay, so the leaf gives him raccoon powers, and the tanuki suit gives him tanuki suit powers. That is correct. Got it.
Now, back to your marks and one, right? Like, I feel like the original Super Mario Brothers and Super Mario Brothers 2, the Japanese one, are fun and approachable, but Super Mario Brothers 3, and I'm not counting Doki Doki Panic since that was rebranded, and yes, they baked all that stuff into the mythology after the fact, but like Super Mario Brothers 3 feels like where they decided this franchise will be fun and playful and kind of dumb, and every time someone's like, that doesn't make sense, we're just going to go, but is it fun? Right? And right. That jives so well with Mario being Nintendo's mascot, because it feels like every one of the decisions they make is, but was it fun? Yeah, but it didn't make any, but was it fun?
Fun.
Because that's our one and only criteria for everything we do. And I like that that happens across this game and all of the little visual choices, except, and this is my one and only critique about the visuals, I actually think the colors are kind of dark. The game is colorful in that there's a variety of colors, right? And the color choices are good for contrast. You always know where Mario is. You always know where the enemies are. Everything is very clear. The things that move kill you, just like in most games, right? Like if it's still, it's platform. If it moves, it kills you. If you compare this to Super Mario World, or if you play Super Mario Brothers 3 on the All-Star Collection that was on the Super Nintendo where they recolored everything, these colors are kind of dark. They're not bad. They're not muddy, but they're like, they're safe palette choices. They don't pop because the colors are bright. They pop because they made good contrasting color choices, which is not a bad thing. Like, they definitely made smart design decisions for the visuals. But I was surprised when I fired the game up and I was like, this is darker than I remember.
Yeah, no, I mean, I that didn't really like call to me, but you know, I when you're saying it, I could see that. I think that, you know, it wasn't something that even pinged on my radar, but you know, definitely legit. The one, you know, I mean, because we're just gonna have to cut some of these things off because we just go on forever about each section, right? So the last thing I really want to mention about visuals is it is just stark clear which power up you have at all times.
Yes.
You know, there's no question, right? I mean, like, you can just at a quick glance be like, I have the fire flower, I have the raccoon tail, I have the only one that you could make the argument is a little bit difficult to tell the difference between is the raccoon tail and the P-wing, but there's an audio cue. And this is what leads us nicely in the audio, unless you have more stuff. But there's an audio cue that is pretty inescapable for when you have the P-Wing, right?
Yeah, it's Link with low hearts.
Yeah, it's Mega Man carrying around the full charge Buster shot, you know?
I will agree with you that audio cue is quite a thing. There is even a subtle visual, right? Because your speed... the arrows are fully lit up and flashing when you have the P-Wing, and they never die back down. So even if you were deaf or playing the game on mute or something, you do still have a very subtle compared to the other differences, but you do have a subtle visual distinction between the raccoon suit and the P-Wing. But man, that audio cue.
Yeah. But I mean, that's the thing is that, you know, like you never have to guess, you know, like which power up you're using. And I mean, by contrast, the Mega Man series, especially some of the later ones in the X series, right? Like, if the color palettes that they choose are like a little bit off, you know, like you may, like if there's like, you know, the blue and then the light blue, you know, you may struggle to distinguish between those two. But I mean, the only two things that were, I mean, because the silhouette's completely different, you know, the only main difference being between Super Mario and Fire Flower Mario. And I mean, Fire Flower Mario is like bright orange, you know, but caution corn cone orange or candy corn orange.
Yeah,
it could be both.
Yeah, it could be both.
So I thought that was kind of a good call, because you never really have to worry about, wait, you know, and eventually you kind of internalize the idea of like, this visual means that Mario is going to behave in this way. So it just kind of takes some of the cognitive load off of like, wait, what do I have equipped right now? It's like, man, you got the Tanuki suit equipped. You know that.
Yeah, you can see it.
Yeah.
I will mention your segue into audio back there, because the thing that kills me about the sound effects in this game is, like every game from this era that tries to push the boundaries of what the Nintendo could output audio wise,
yep,
there's a lot of action going on screen, and all of it takes precedence over the music. So
yep,
you're just dropping notes out of the melody left and right. And it's not that big of a deal. Every time I've mentioned this now, I think I say the same thing, which is like, it's annoying because I'm aware of it. And I'm sure yep, most people don't even think about it, and their brain just fills in the notes to the songs because they're super catchy. It's good music, right? And but once you have that glass shattered, it is difficult to unshatter.
Yes. I will say that, that, you know, like when you're jumping around and stuff like that, yeah, some of the notes stuck out, but I think that my brain can compensate for that. You know, as you said, with the P-Wing going, it's doing that noise all the time, and the other sound effects, which means even more of the music stucking out, and that I can't unnotice. You know, because if you jump and start picking up coins while you're flying through the air with the P-Wing, which is likely because they do that mechanically, you know, like you have the P-Wing, so they're like, oh, here are all these coins you couldn't get to before, which is super cool. But yeah, like the music is just kind of like, I can't pull all of this weight. And it's not great.
Well, and that point, sprinty P-Wing noise is, I believe, the term for it is a trill on a flute. It's like two notes. It's like, just super fast. And when you're flying, that lasts for, I don't know, 4 to 6 seconds. It's not long because you don't maintain speed, but for the P-Wing, it's the entire length of the level or until you get hurt. Right. So it's just,
but that being said, to your point, the music speaks for itself as far as how catchy it is, because here's the thing is, I was like, okay, you know what? Because I played the game plenty, but since I got so into playing the game, I was like, I want to listen to just some of the music just on its own. So I was like, I'm just going to listen to some of this on my way home, you know, because it's Super Mario Brothers 3, right? It took me a solid 10 minutes to find a decent original soundtrack to this, because of how many remixes and personal flavors and all of those, all of which I listened to as well. It's all good, but I was like, man, it literally, the original content has been drowned out by everyone and their sister saying like, this is my take on it, which is great. I mean, like no complaints about that, but that definitely speaks to the how good and how popular the music is when everybody's like, oh, no, I'm going to do a cover of Super Mario World, or Brothers, or World, but Brothers.
All the brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all the supers.
Tell me what you think about this, because you went out of your way to listen to the soundtrack, and I appreciate that dedication. I was very aware of the fact that the theme music, like the world themed music, yeah, happens on the map, not in the levels, right? All the fortresses have the fortress music. All the overworld levels have the, you know, right? You hear that a billion times because it's the
or it's do 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 do,
right? So there's I think three like grasslands songs. There's like two or three underworld, you know, the when you go down a pipe. There's yes, there's oh god, that one is such a good version of the underworld music.
I know, right?
Underdark, it's the Underdark now. I can't believe I never thought of that before. But there's every map has, you know, each world has its own like world music for when you're on the map. And because there is stuff to do on the map, you do actually spend a little time on the map, so you do get to hear those tunes. But I was surprised that the in-level music is basically the same, you know, world over world. And that's, it's not bad. It's just the fact that they have unique music on all the maps means they definitely thought, oh, one day we may have themed music for the levels, but it is not this day. There's like above ground music, below ground music, water music, and then fortress music. And that's, it's a choice. Like, I don't think I'm upset about it, but I was just like, once I noticed it, I was like, oh, huh. They definitely decided to do this on purpose.
So let's argue that for a minute, because yeah, I didn't notice that, but just thinking on the fly here. Let's argue for a minute that the number of songs in there is the maximum number of songs that are going to be in there, either for cost or hardware reasons, right? My guess would be that they did it this way to break up the sameness, you know, because instead of like having like all of the desert theme song like throughout the desert, right, you know, is that you get a little bit of desert theme and then a little bit of level music and then a little bit of desert theme and then a little bit of castle music, as opposed to all desert theme, all water theme, all, you know, like chunked together. So it breaks up the music a little bit instead of having it all themed all the time, would be my guess.
Yeah, that, I mean, that's a way to think about it. And there's also this is not my segue into mechanics, although it would be a good one. There's a certain amount of muscle memory you build up for what sorts of things you're going to be asked to do based on the music that's presented. If you have the everything's fine, I'm in the grasslands music, that kind of tells you that flight is a way to solve all of your problems here. If you have the underwater music, it's like, oh, I'm going to be dealing with water problems. If you have the underdark music, then you know that flight is not a good solution to most of your problems, right? So you, and then there's like the like lilting, like cloud, no enemies, but lots of coins music, right? When you like jump on the orange music blocks. So there's some mechanical information. It's probably not a ton, but there's some amount of mechanical information that's communicated by the music, right? It's like, here's the sort of thing you're dealing with, right? And then like all of the airships have like the same airship music, which tells you like, this is an airship, these are the kinds of, you know, the airship problems, those are the ones you're going to be dealing with in this area. So there's a certain amount of like preparation for the challenges ahead based on the music that's presented. So I can give them that. And also, if they did the reverse and they were like, oh, okay, we're going to have grassland music, underdark music, underwater music, and fortress music, and then, you know, times eight, because now we have to have themed versions of each of those. Like, that's probably a little much to ask a composer to do, period, let alone and also fit it all on an S cartridge.
Yeah. The one other music note that I just kind of want to touch on, because, you know, we definitely want to get the mechanics, is I really like that they were able to work in the original Mario Brothers theme into the music. Do you remember where it was?
I don't. No, I can't think of it.
It's the music box.
Oh, I didn't use the music box because I always murder those dudes.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I used it to get past the little piranha.
Yeah, the chompy thingy. Plant, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. But you should insert a little clip of it for our listeners. But yeah, it's a lullaby version of the original song. And I was like, because I just turned the music box on and I was like, why is this so soothing to me? Oh, right, because it's the original Super Mario. I'm like, my brain said, you like this a lot. I was like, why do I like this so much, brain? Explain why. It's like, this is a music from your childhood, remixed in a very melodic way. Ah, thank you.
Oh, thank you. I'm sure every successful artist has this problem where, looking back, people are just like, oh, did you know when you were composing the original Super Mario Brothers theme that it would go on to be this incredibly iconic piece of music? And I'm sure anyone who has any sense is like, you know, oh, we felt like we were onto something special, but we never could have imagined that it would turn into this incredible thing. And we're so humbled. And so, right. Like, I'm sure that interview has happened a million times, but you must get to a certain point in your career. Like, if you, let's assume for a minute that the composer who did Super Mario Brothers, Super Mario Brothers 2, Super Mario Brothers 3, and Super Mario World is all the same composer. Because I know for the first ones, it definitely is, but Super Mario World, I'm not positive. But let's say that it is. When that person was getting to Super Mario Brothers 3, and they saw, like, the public fervor over this game, they must have been thinking, like, oh, this is an opportunity to, like, put in this little clever callback. And then when they saw how well that game was received, and then they were composing for Super Mario World, surely they were like, oh, okay, I may be aware that I'm a big deal at this point, right? Like, you kind of know that it's like, I can't overplay my hand and let them know I'm a big deal, but there needs to be some clever callbacks and some through lines. And yeah. Right. Because now we have a franchise. Like, it's not Iron Man. Now it's the Avengers. And then eventually yes. It's Infinity War, right? Like, you get to the point where you're like, we can't let them know that we know, but we know. And we know they know we know, right? Like,
we know this, and we know that they know, but they make believe that they don't know. We make believe that we believe that they don't know, but know that they know.
Yes, thank you. I knew halfway into that, I was like, I'm not doing this right. but I appreciate the deftness with which that is handled, right? And the fact that, like, I was able to go through and not, because on this playthrough, I just didn't use the music box, so I didn't notice. But if I had used that music box, damn well sure I would have noticed. And yeah. I would have appreciated it because it was done well.
Yep. Oh, yeah. No, actually, while you were talking, I was just kind of like, I want to listen to it. So I just kind of queued it up. So while you were talking, it was going in my ears. That's why I was kind of like dancing back and forth. It's like, yeah.
I will put a clip of it into the show. I actually, by the time a listener hears me say those words, they would have already heard it. So if I didn't put a clip in, now they know that I'm lazy.
Quick, Chrono, we have to time travel to fix this problem.
I can't respond to you because he's a silent protagonist.
Oh, if only. But anyways, snaps. But anyways, gameplay.
Yeah, we got to talk about the controls when we talk about the mechanics, because this Mario does something that I don't particularly care for, which is they went too far, in my opinion, on the weightiness of Mario. He has a lot of momentum. He has a lot of momentum you have to redirect when you change directions on the ground. He changes directions differently in the air than he does when you're on foot. And I think it's well executed. I just don't like the way this Mario feels compared to how, like, Super Mario World Mario feels or Super Mario Brothers Mario feels. Like, this is of the original 2D games, I like this one the least. It's not bad. It's totally doable, but it took me a while to mentally readjust and be like, oh, you have way more air control than you do ground control. And if you're running, you have even more air control than you do ground control. Like, the bars move in either further opposite directions. And it's not bad. Like I said, the execution is good. It's a really good chicken salad sandwich, and I don't like chicken salad.
And that's legit. I think one of the things that I noticed was that you can actually leap. I'm not sure if it's from a pure standing start, but I don't believe you even need to be at a running start completely across the screen. Like, Mario's leap is massive in this game, you know?
It's probably at least 2/3 of a full screen length. That's huge.
Yeah, I remember, like, stress testing at one point because I was like, no way can I make this jump. And I was just like, and just, you know, hammered it across the screen. I was like, all right, so that's a thing. But I like that because basically, unlike the Jurassic Park game that we played, where as a Velociraptor, you have a massive jump and can jump further than the screen, Mario's jump lands him about the length of the screen, which means that if it's on the screen, you can reasonably get to it, you know, unless, like, it's you know, literally it's like way, way, way too high, in which case then, you know, like, there's like a kind of a puzzle thing to it. But as far as if it's like a linear jump, you can make it, you know, so there's no, like, you know, I can see it, can I get there? If you can see it, you can get there. You know, so I kind of like that I wasn't being forced to do that mental calculus very regularly, you know, that the level design was set up that that you know, if you build it, they will come. If I could see it, I could jump there, which I appreciated. One of the, I believe that this is okay. So Doki Doki Panic didn't have any power ups other than the mushroom, right?
There's a superstar.
Okay. Yeah. There's a superstar, but
there's no fire flower. There's no cosplay. I mean, cause the characters all handle differently. So that's
right.
That's their version of power ups, I guess.
In kind.
But yeah, there's none that I could think of.
So then this is the first one, at least to my memory, where you have 3 hit points instead of 2.
Which was unique to the American version.
Really?
Yes, because I also noticed that. And then I was like, wait a minute, this feels like something they dumbed down for Americans, because later Mario games also did this. So there's Small Mario, Big Mario, and Powered Up Mario.
Yep.
And in Super Mario Brothers, when you get hit, if you're Fire Flower Mario, you revert to Small Mario. This is the first game where you lose your power up and are just Big Mario, but the Japanese version did not do it that way.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So, I mean, I knew the former. I did not know the latter.
Yeah.
Fascinating. Interesting.
But this is, they decided that the American way was just going to be the way going forward. All later Mario games, US and Japan, do the 3 hit points.
Yeah. And even Super Mario World does like 3 plus, where you can get 3 hit points and then store another hit point in your.
Oh yeah, because you can carry a power up. Yeah,
yeah, which is interesting. So
that visual of the power up is the same as the end card game in Super Mario Brothers 3, the little mushroom, star, and fire flower that you match up. It's that exact same graphic.
Which gotta be where they got it from, was from that adventure.
Exactly. Yep. Yeah, they were like, oh, this will be a callback to when Mario saved the world.
Yeah, all holds up, right? Not only do you have 3 hit points, but one of the things that that's very, you know, they leverage it very well, so on and so forth. But I mean, I think that it's just kind of interesting, because that can be very game changing, where it's like, oh, how many hit points do you have? 50% more can change the way you interact with the game. I did find this interesting little kind of flavor in the game, which is that the raccoon, the leaf, the fire flower, all of that just give you one additional hit point, right? Which is to say that, and this is different from like Mario World and whatnot, is that if you get a fire flower, right? So there is a fire flower available for you to consume, and then you become Small Mario and you go touch that fire flower, you just become Big Mario.
Yes. I noticed
that.
And
that's heartbreaking.
Yes. I think that is a remnant of the way they had originally designed the system, is because I want to say World 8, where there's like some gauntlets you have to go through, and there's friggin' bullet bills and crap everywhere, and Koopa Troopas jumping around. And
yeah, it's closer to a bullet hell, which is not your favorite.
No. And I kept getting hit near this one question block, and every time I would hit the question block and the leaf would be falling down, and I would get hit right before I got the leaf, which made me small, and then I would grab the leaf and it would just make me big, but not Raccoon Mario. And because that happened like a bunch of times, because I died there a bunch of times, I was like, huh.
What's that about?
If you take damage, all power-ups become mushrooms.
In Russia, all power-ups are mushrooms. One of the things too, that this is tangential, but that both my wife and I got a huge kick out of was, I'd be sitting there like going through one of those really hard levels and being like, oh God, just come on. And then, I'd get to a point and everybody like, you see, that's the thing, is the game rewards a skilled player, you know, like it lets a good player be good. And then I get hit, be like, nope, I was blindfolded. It was my little brother playing, you know, just literally just quoting Video Game Donkey to my wife the whole time. And she's just getting a huge kick out of it. So that was something I enjoyed. But when you were talking about like the dying in the same place over and over again, like that was definitely when I was just kind of like, nope, you see, this level's crap. And then right when I get pie, I'd be like, yeah, no, that's because I'm the master. I've unleashed my final form, you know?
Well, and this game, like a lot of Nintendo's games, but the Mario series in particular, is there were times that I was angry with my performance. There were times when I was disappointed in my performance, but it was very rare that I was like, that was the game's fault. And yeah. And I can name a couple examples. This game suffers from what a lot of Nintendo games and just games from this era did, which is I went slightly too far to one side and something either spawned back into reality or despawned out of reality because there was too much stuff on the screen, right? So that can cause some mechanical unpleasantness. And it's like, I can forgive that. It's annoying, but I can forgive that. And it's not a common problem because they have really good level design. But the other place is the hitbox for colliding with something from the, like what should be you jumping on top of it is just strict enough that it can get you. So the place that it kept getting me is the, I don't even know what it is. The thing you fight at the end of the fortress. It's the little dancing spiky guy. No idea what the hell that thing's called, but sometimes when you fight the dancing spiky guy, when you jump on him the first time and he leaps into the air, little wings come out of his back and he floats up instead of falling down. And if you jump early enough, you can get over him before his little wings come out. And if you don't jump early enough and his little wings come out, then he's still under you, but the game registers it as him being side to side with you. And so you get hit and take damage or die instead of him getting hit and dying like he's supposed to. And that happened enough times that I was just like, can you please just register this as a hit? Like, you know what I meant. Right. And again, it's not experience breaking, but that was one of the few times where I was like, no, the game should be registering this as a hit. Later Mario's would have registered this as a hit. Like this is an artifact of the time when they were just like, video games are hard sometimes. And so, yeah, but almost in every other instance, I was like, no, that was my fault. Or like, oh, wow, this part's really hard and I need to get good. Right. And that's an accomplishment to design a game that is hard, but where the player is like, I will rise to this challenge.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like it, like you said, is that there was, it was very, very rare that I was like, nah, that was garbage. I like, or I got frustrated, you know, and most of the time it was just kind of like, nope, I died. No, there were a couple of times when the level design was obtuse to the point where I could not figure out what to do within the time limit, but there were two levels where that happened. And by the time, like I had like 30 seconds left, I had figured out what I needed to do. I just could no longer now accomplish it in the time limit remaining. But then the next time I went through and did it, I did it right. You know? Yeah. So, I mean, just very well done there. As far as the level design goes, I do think that the cycle time is not, it's not bad. It's just not ideal, you know, by today's standards.
Yeah, I like that they amped up the difficulty a little bit, but then like amped the length of the levels way down.
Yes.
And that made me more okay with the cycle time. Like even if I died right near the end of a level, I was like, well, I have 400 seconds to beat something that can be done in, you know, 40. Like it's mostly, you know, the auto scrolling levels. And there's a couple like maze levels and some of the fortresses you have to like backtrack and go through multiple doors. But the overwhelming majority of levels are like pretty short, fairly short.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, by my own personal and today's standards, and again, Celeste kind of ruined me for everything, is that, you know, it's, but it is the best that one could hope for from this era. Because basically, if you die, it just kicks you. Well, it kicks you back to the world map, which gives you a number of different options. Because at that point, you can sometimes just opt out of playing that level. Like, you don't have to play it at all. You can hop into a cloud and skip the level. You can power yourself up so you're more likely to be able to get through the level, you know? So it does all of those things, which gives you choice, gives you agency. And then if you run out of lives, it only kicks you to the beginning of the world, not to the beginning of the game, which is, again, a huge leap. If you said to somebody at, you know, Nintendo said like, hey, when people die, we're going to knock them back 3 seconds, it would have laughed in your face, you know, because like, because I mean, games at that time just didn't do stuff like that, you know? So yeah, so like I said, like is it perfect for what it's trying to do? I'd say no, just because there were definitely times where, yeah, the level spiked, the difficulty spiked right at the end of the level. And then I had to go slog through the beginning part of the level, which I had very much so mastered, you know? The only reason why I would screw something up is because I was not paying attention, because that's not the part that I wanted to do. But even still, those were very rare, you know, like it did not happen very regularly. So, so like I said, like this is one of the ones where it's like, so far I've been like 10, 10, 10, this is like 9, you know, where it's like, you know, and the person diving like takes your thing, they're like, this is complete crap. And you know, like walks off. It's like, you know, like what do you have to do to get a 10 around here? But you know, so like I said, like if I'm being picky, this is the place where I would pick, you know, but still acceptable. Absolutely. Better than one would anticipate. I mean, it's better than Sonic, you know?
Oh, like, yeah, way better.
Yeah. So, you know, yeah, it's good.
Yeah. And they, I think it's worth specifically mentioning, that when you are thrown back to the beginning of the world, all of the levels you have beaten need to be beaten again, except in World 8. World 8 is specifically laid out, unique among the worlds, to have several key differences. One is most of the levels in World 8 are not normal numbered levels. They are boss style auto scrolling tank levels. Most of those levels also have a way to completely cheat. One of them you can fly over with the P-Wing. One of them is a boat and you can swim under the boats and just press A really fast so you keep swimming, but you skip the entire level, right? One of them is not fun and I almost broke my controller over, but once those levels are beaten, they are beaten, even if you continue. And then there are levels that are normal, you know, like 1, 2, 3 levels, but those levels, once you've beaten all of the tank and airship style levels, can be subverted by going through warp pipes like on the overworld map. So level 8 is the one and only level or world in the game that if you make it all the way to the end and you die fighting Bowser and it kicks you back to the beginning of the world, you can actually just walk straight to Bowser again. But there's those little tiny mini levels in the middle of the world that don't have normal end card or like the, you know, the where you walk off stage at the end. They all are tiny platforming challenges where you can get leaves at the end. There's a treasure chest and a leaf in it. And there's, I think, 5 of them in a row. And it's a very early example of, hey, we know this is hard. And if you're struggling with it, we're going to let you go back, collect some power-ups, and then come back here and try the boss again without slogging through the whole game or without slogging through the whole world. Even you can just basically try again with enough time to cool off a little bit. And that's, they had to really think that through, since the 7 preceding worlds, you don't get any of that courtesy, right? This is very unique.
Well, and I feel that that kind of shows that even the devs at this point in time recognize that there is a link between difficulty and cycle time. You know, is there like the game is now, we are going to put a huge spike in difficulty here and a consistent one. We have to lower the cycle time, you know? So they recognize that those two things were related. I just think that, you know, they didn't realize how far they can push that, you know? And to be fair, many games to this day still don't, you know? So the fact that, you know, they were working with stone tools and happened to, you know, build the Colosseum, you know, it's like, well, I mean, it's, you know, not the Sydney Opera House. It's like, no, it's not, but it's not, it ain't that bad. And Boom Boom is the name of the guy at the end of all of the fortresses.
I'm sad about that name.
Oh no, you'll be sadder because in Super Mario 3D Land, there is a female iteration of him, and that one's called Pom Pom, and that's worse.
All right, let's talk about the power-ups.
All right, let's talk about the power-ups.
So the raccoon suit makes you fly. The P-Wing lets you fly forever. Can also fly with the Tanuki suit, but that's not what makes the Tanuki suit cool. The Tanuki suit grants you temporary invincibility. The Fire Flower functions like the Fire Flower. The Star functions like the Star. The Frog is pretty cool.
Hilarious.
It is. It's funny, but it also like makes swimming like tolerable, which is nice.
Oh yeah.
But I mean, is the Hammer Brothers suit not overwhelmingly the coolest? Because I'm pretty sure it's overwhelmingly the coolest, which is saying something in an arena with the Tanuki suit.
Correct. Which was actually one of the things I wanted to ask was, I played quite a bit of this game. You can get the Hammer Brothers suit without a Game Genie, right? Like, that's possible. Because I didn't. I got a lot of Tanuki suits. Like my cup runneth over with Tanuki suits. But I didn't get any Hammer Brothers suits, and I died a little inside.
The Hammer Brothers suit, I think, only comes up in Toad Houses, which means you don't have a ton of chances to get it.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think they only come up in, like, the dark red Toad Houses as opposed to the light yellow Toad Houses. You know what I'm saying?
No. Nope.
Yeah, they're two different colors. Yeah, there's two different colored Toad Houses.
And does that color distinction matter, apparently?
Well, 100% of the time when I went to the darker Toad Houses, I got Tanuki suits, and 0% of the time when I went to lighter colored Toad Houses did I get Tanuki suits.
Hmm.
So I think that the darker colored Toad Houses are way, way, way rarer. I think there's like three of them in the game, whereas the lighter ones are pretty common. But I think that they have like the more powerful power-ups.
Yeah.
You looking it up?
No, but I'm feeling good that if I did expose myself to too much research or an unusual amount of research to this over the course of my life before now, there's still things I don't know. Like that's kind of a good feeling, right? It's like,
yeah.
Oh, there's still secrets, still mysteries.
There's still things to explore. It's like that episode of Futurama where Farnsworth like thinks he's discovered everything and like spirals into a depression. And then it's like, but there's even more to discover. I never got the Hammer, but no, the Hammer Brothers costume is wildly superior. That, whenever I would play with Game Genie, that was the number one thing that I went for. I would go for the, there was like normal jump, super jump, and like mega jump, which just allowed you to leap around like a madman. So I'd go for mega jump and always Hammer Brother Mario, and then just have the time of my life. You know, like, was the game challenging? No. Was it fun? Yes. It's a blast. I've definitely spent a lot of time as Hammer Brother Mario, but not in this playthrough for whatever reason.
I had a similar experience with Tanuki suits. So I had a bunch of short play sessions and then like two like really long, like multi-hour, like I'm just going to kind of sit here and play this for fun. And on one of them, my cup runneth over with Tanuki suits. And I was just like waiting for the Hammer Brothers suit. And I was like, it's not going to happen. Why isn't it happening? And then on the other playthrough, it was just like, I had like three or four of them. And I was like, oh, yay. Hmm. Right. So I just, there may be a rhythm to it or a randomness or a pseudo randomness that's exploitable. And I just, because I wasn't trying to break those boundaries, I didn't break them, which in a way I think is good. Is like, I was living the experience, right? You were living the experience and like, we just got what we got. And maybe there is like, oh, if you always do the one on the left after you beat this level, it'll always have a Hammer Brothers suit or whatever. And I'm kind of glad when I don't always plumb all those depths and see the man behind the curtain. I do want to specifically mention some of the overworld power-ups, because there's also the cloud you mentioned. There's the hammer, which lets you break the block or the boulders. And sometimes you can like skip levels and get the warp pipes and stuff. And then there's the warp whistle. And the warp whistle is special because when you use the warp whistle, it takes you to the warp pipe map, right? And then there's three lanes. There's the 2-3-4 lane, and then the 5-6-7 lane, and then the 8 lane. Did you know when you're on the warp whistle map, you can open the menu and use the warp whistle and it takes you directly to world 8?
I did not.
That's really clever, because when you're on the warp whistle map, it looks and behaves exactly like the overworld map, because it is the overworld map. And if you use the warp whistle, it just takes you straight to level 8. That's actually the only way to do that. And they designed that on purpose that way because this game does not have a battery save. So if you're playing and you have to turn the console off and then you're like, I was so close to the end of the game. There are three warp whistles in the entire game. Two of them are right near the beginning. So you play through like two levels, you get two warp whistles, use one to get to the warp whistle map, use the other one to get to World 8, and then you can go and defeat Bowser. So it's like, it's not quite the same as a save because you don't have any of your items. You still have to beat all of the tanks and airships and stuff again, but it's a pretty smart workaround to not having a save system.
It's a stage select. Yeah. I mean, like basically,
literally.
Yeah. But I mean, like the thing is that they bake it into the mechanics, so it still feels like you're working for it, you know, but they really did. I do feel design this game around the idea. And I think that they may have learned from Japanese Super Mario Brothers 2, where they're like, that game wasn't, they said like, we're going to make a game that looks visually the same and is way harder. And they're like, we don't like that. And it's like, okay, we're going to make a game that is way visually different and just super fun to play. And they're like, that worked. Because I mean, there's nothing, this game does not necessitate that you prove yourself to it. It is there for you to have fun, you know? So if you want to play World 4, that's great, man. Play World 1-1, World 2-1, then play World 3-1, get a warp whistle, World in the castle. So you play four levels, which will take you like 2.5 minutes if you're a skilled player, right? And then you can get to any map in the game, any map that you want. It's all open at that point, you know? So the fact that they baked it into World 1, you know, is really, really impressive. You know, so I mean, like you said, is that you can just get, you can play whatever part of the game you want to play because the game meets you on your terms. You know, it doesn't force you to play it the way they want you to play it. They're like, man, if you just want to bop around and play whatever level you want to play, go for it. If you want to play through from the beginning, go for it. If you want to, you know, play Bowser 15 times until you actually beat him, go for it. Man, just you do you. The only time we're really going to punch you back is when we really feel that you've probably gotten further than your skill, you know, on more luck than skill. They're going to punch you back a little bit so you can get a little bit more skill, you know? It's a really, really impressive setup. Did you play any of the New Game Plus?
No, I didn't. And I'll tell you why. It took me longer to beat the game than I honestly thought it would. I remembered this game being hard, but my brain and my thumbs have very much settled on the Super Mario World-esque momentum and way that Mario moves, which is, I mean, you really got to see them side by side. Super Mario Brothers, Super Mario Brothers 3, and Super Mario World, if you just look at them casually, you'd be like, oh, he moves basically the same. And it's like, yeah, basically, but not exactly. And I played Super Mario World the most out of all the 2D Marios, no question. And so this game is hard in some spots, and it took me a little while to kind of get back into that vibe. And I beat the game about 2 days ago as of recording time, and I was like, okay, wait a minute. And it got to the end, and I hit start, and it brought me back to the title screen. And I hit start and it dumped me back on the map. And I literally put the controller down and I was like, there's a whole bunch of New Game Plus stuff and I can't remember what any of it is. And I don't have time to experience any of it. And I was just like, God damn it. So, like, I was very aware that I was like, I know there's more depth to plumb here and I don't have time.
So what you could have done was be good and, you know, beat it like way sooner, you know, like I did, you know? Like, yeah, I mean, like, so basically what my personal experience was I sat down, was awesome and, just basically one shot at the game, you know, no scope,
yeah, right? Speedrun world record right there.
Yeah. No, I honestly didn't play too much of the New Game Plus. I believe the only difference that, because I played a couple of the first levels, the only difference that I could see was that it just, your entire inventory is all P-Wings, you know?
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Like, I don't remember that at all.
Four rows of P-Wings. Yeah, four rows of P-Wings. And I know that it's that because I used one of them And then I just kind of farted around for a little bit. But then, yeah, I got a warp whistle. And I was like, oh, good. This actually gives me a frame of reference. Because otherwise, literally, you just hammer through. And you don't know where it all ends. Because it's just all P-wings, you know? But which is I think, you know, absent the Super Mario World New Game Plus, which is just, I mean, it's a whole nother game. They made a whole nother game that, like, a bunch of people will just never experience. I think that that's a clever way to kind of add new content, because the P-Wings were, you covet those, right? You only get a few of them. And those are your, I don't want to deal with this anymore button, right? But giving you a near infinite supply of them gives you the ability to explore the level freely and look for any secrets you may have missed. So if there was like an area you wanted to get to where you're like, I think there's something up there. It's like, great, go check it out, you know, because you now have an infinite number of P-Wings. So if you screw it up 3, 4, 7 times, then, you know, no harm, no foul. So I thought that was kind of a good way to do New Game Plus. I'm not sure if there was any New Game Plus content on top of that, but that was what I experienced.
Well, and I love what that is communicating to the player, which is most of this game is about moving left and right. Sometimes there's stuff up above you. Go look for it.
Yeah, go check it out.
Because there's in literally the first level, there's a super obvious row of coins that goes up into the sky, right? So from 1-1, the game is like, sometimes there's going to be stuff up there. And if you didn't know you could go up there, you should probably try to figure that out, right?
Yep.
So then if you beat the game, the reward is you probably didn't find all of the stuff up in the sky. Go look for it. Go take all the time you want. So I like that. Like, instead of just saying like, you know, oh, like the original Legend of Zelda, right? It's like, you know, oh, are you ready for another quest? And it's like, shut up. Like, it's just the same game, but like, yeah, a little bit harder. It's like, no, we lovingly crafted this world. And now that you've beaten the game we laid out for you, go play around. It's almost like a sandbox mode.
Well, it is. And basically, because if we say that the main core aesthetic is exploration, they said like, okay, you've explored the world. It's like, cool, great, good job. You've gotten like 95% of it. Here are the tools that you need to explore the other 5%. But the thing is, you don't know which 5% that is. So check out all of the levels, you know, go through all the levels with the P-Wing and just check them out, you know, see what there is to see. So it's a great way to just kind of add additional content. And like you said, create a sandbox mode for the player back when sandbox games weren't really a thing, which is pretty impressive. The one final thing that I want to mention is that, this game does something which is pretty stellar for a game of this time, which is that there are actually rewards of different types, which is to say, if we go back to like Donkey Kong Country, right? Where, you know, when we were talking and we were saying like, you know, all of the rewards are lives, you know, like you get bananas, but those become lives. You get, you know, special stuff, but eventually those become lives, you know? For this game, there's so many different types of rewards. So the reward for beating a level is moving forward in the game, right? But the reward for getting all 3 stars or, you know, whatever matches in a row, right? At the end stage levels, that reward is lives. They also reward you with lives for the quick scrolling match 3, which I never got the hang of
even
a little bit.
Like 5% success at best.
So never got the hang of that. But the thing is that the toad houses, right, and the matching game rewards you with items, which all allow you to interact with the world in a different way. So one of the main, they generally pull those 2 different reward levers, but those are 2 very, very different rewards. One of them eventually gives you more lives, which means that it reduces your cycle time. And the other one gives you items, which give you a new way in which to interact with the world. Like, you can literally get a fire flower in a level that does not have a fire flower in it, but you can see what it's like to be Fire Mario in this level, you know? So I think that that's really fascinating. They were able to kind of master the differences of kind of reward.
And I'm really glad you phrased that that way, because I had that thought, but in a stupid way, which is why I didn't pursue it as part of the discussion. But The stupid version of that thought is, you can go through the desert as Frog Mario, which they obviously don't want you to do, but they sure as hell don't stop you from doing it, right? And yep. and that also means that there are probably places in the level design where they're like, this level has a problem that is best solved by being Fire Mario, but there's no Fire Flower in this level. Or this level has a problem that is best solved by being, you know, Raccoon Mario, but there is no leaf in this level. Or there's no leaf, you know, before you get to the point where you would want to use it or something like that. And that, again, like that reinforces the exploration. This game also has lots of secrets and like little side weirdness and stuff going on, blocks that come out of nowhere. The orange, you know, note blocks that I mentioned earlier that send you up into the sky, and like you could skip giant chunks of the level. Like, there's, for a game that is ostensibly about going right, there's a lot of times where it's like, I don't want to go right, or I'm going to fly right, or I'm going to hop right, or I'm going to fly up, right, up and left. Like, there's a lot of opportunity to break from what the game is ostensibly telling you to do, and then you're rewarded for it. Like, and then it turns out that that is actually what the designers wanted you to do. And that's, now I want to go explore all the levels in the desert area as Frog Mario. Cause it's like, ooh, this is really dumb. Is there some good reason to be Frog Mario in the desert?
Well, actually the one way that somebody once told me to, you can tell a explorer type person and a game that encourages exploration is if you do a thing, if you work really hard to do a thing to get to like a place where you're like, there is no way the developers think I'm supposed to be here, and there's something there for you, like that is an amazing feeling where you're like, oh man, I worked really hard. I got to like this area I wasn't supposed to do. And there's a little sign that says like, you know, you're not supposed to be here. It's like, oh, they knew I could get up here. You know, like that, that feeling is awesome. So even if like, you know, you get to like an area and you're like, oh dude, they're like, there's like a coin smiley face up here. You know, like they did this for me. Like, you know, like there's like 1% of the people that would have gotten here, but I was one of them. And I now know there's a smiley face there. And that's for me and the developers to have. Like that's fantastic. And they did that. And that's cool.
Yeah. And I think those kinds of developers would be the best kind to build Mario games, because, you know, like we've been saying, this is the time in history where they decided definitively Mario's going to be whimsical. And there's going to be silliness and whimsy. And if that's not what you're here for, you're probably not going to be happy. And I like that that manifests is silly mini games, that it manifests as silly level design, as silly power-ups, as the literal set pieces that make up the world in this game visually, the, you know, the hidden Super Mario Brothers theme music, and also things like the adventure style, you know, thank you for playing my game, right? That's whimsy kind of permeates, and
it's just joy, and, you know, and it's just joyful. The game is just, you know,
yeah. And this is why the dark, gritty Mario memes have never really been that like funny to me. I mean, they're clever and like, yeah, I get it, but it's like, no, that's not what this is. Like, Mario's whimsy, and you can make him dark and gritty, and you can put blood and realistic features and everything, but it's like, but I will never prefer that version. I will always prefer to think that Mario and Peach and Bowser are gods, and that this is just how they entertain themselves in eternity, is putting on plays, pantomiming Bowser pretending to kidnap the princess.
Yeah. No, I mean, I agreed. So any other notes?
No, and I mean, as we, you know, segue in with games of this caliber, no nostalgia goggles required. This game is amazing. If you remember it being good, it still is. If you've never played it before, it's worth going back and playing. The one thing that I think is interesting about this game is I'm not sure if I would recommend the OG or if I would say to go play the Super Mario All-Stars version, because the Super Mario All-Stars version is literally like an HD re-release. It's the same music, but without dropped notes. It's the same graphics, but with a wider palette. I don't think any single thing about the game mechanically was altered. So I guess just pick either version and go play it. Like go play this game.
Yeah. If you have not agreed, no nostalgia goggles required. If you have not played this game, go play this game. I mean, I'd be surprised if anybody's really listening to the podcast and it's like, oh yeah, you know, that's one that I've always meant to kind of check out. You know, it's like, it's pretty, pretty iconic. I mean, my parents have played this game because I played this game so much. But no, absolutely no nostalgia goggles required. I feel like that you know, for me at least, this game just kind of walked on stage and said, "This is an amazing game," and scene.
The curtain falls. The music plays. The credits roll. Then it all fades to black. And you're left by yourself. The fanfare is gone. There's no player two there by your side to share victories won. But as you slowly progress down the hall to your bed, a few great events leak back into your head from the time that you spent traversing the land, battling evil, fighting the darkness, just sword in hand. Your memories creep in with the edge of a smile. You realize again what you've lost for a while. You're gonna think back much less on how you saved the day.